The you idiot rule is that if you read an email aloud, if you write an email and then you read it aloud, and you could naturally add the words, you idiot, to the end of it, that's an email you should not send.
Welcome to Your Intended Message, the perfect place for leaders and promising professionals who want to convey the intended message for greater success. Every week, we interview experts who address the challenges and best practices to deliver your message effectively. That might be one-to-one, one-to-few, or one-to-many. And perhaps the most important conversation, one-to-self. I'm your host, George Torok. My guest today is Liz Danziger. Here's three facts that I think you should know about Liz. One, as a writer, she is the author of four books published by major publishers, including The Business Writing Guide, Get to the Point, which was originally published by Random House. She's also a columnist on Inc.com. Two, as a trainer and coach, she has decades of experience in preparing teams to write clearly and confidently. Her clients include both major corporations such as Holland America, Airgas, Coldwell Banker Commercial, and small businesses. And the third point, her goal is to empower people to wield the power of words to create success. Liz Danziger, welcome to Your Intended Message.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure and an honor to be here.
Delighted to be talking with you, especially appreciate the help, the knowledge you bring to us to make better use of words. Liz, are there, when it, and we use words differently in speaking versus writing, and your focus is mainly writing, is that true?
Yes, that's true.
And the interesting thing about writing, and it was a senior executive years ago told me, you can say what you want, but when you put it in writing, it's there forever.
So true. All discoverable by lots of high-priced attorneys.
Which could be a problem for some people, no question. Liz, are there common mistakes that right off the bat you could say, okay, stop doing this, this, and this, and people's writing will dramatically improve?
Yes. One thing is that they could know their purpose before they start and know their point before they start. My view is that most writing problems happen before a person starts to write. They happen in the thinking phase when people don't think about their purpose. And that's why I'm so pleased to be on this podcast, Your Intended Message, because that's exactly what the Work Talk trainings are about, is having people be clear on their intentions and then target their readers. And so the first thing is to know your purpose and your point. The second thing would be to think about your reader. It astonishes me sometimes how people will just sit down and they're just tappity, tappity, tap, but they're writing away. And then if I stop them in coaching or in training and I ask them, so what do you think your reader's interested in? And they're like, oh, that's an interesting question. So they need to think about the reader and they need to use clear language. And the last thing I will say is people have to reread before they send. It's a common, common error that people just tappity tap and send without proofreading, and they live to bear the consequences.
And Liz, read before you send to find the typos or to understand the tone?
That's an outstanding question. And the answer is, of course, you have to do both. You have to make sure that you haven't disclosed anything you shouldn't disclose. You have to use your judgment and make sure that what you're saying is appropriate to be put in an email, which will last forever until the fall of Western civilization. It will be around forever. And check your tone. And I just wrote a column for Inc.com about writing toxic emails. And I talk about the you idiot rule. The you idiot rule is that if you read an email aloud, if you write an email and then you read it aloud, and you could naturally add the words, "you idiot," to the end of it, that's an email you should not send. So you really have to check the tone. And of course, grammar, you know, people think, oh, grammar, darn, it's so boring. The truth is, grammar is the structure of the language. And when people make grammar mistakes, they lose credibility. And that is a terrible loss.
And you idiot, that's a valuable point right there, Liz. I can think back to an email I sent just a couple of years ago, and I still remember it. And if I had only thought about the "you idiot" test, I wouldn't have sent it.
Yeah, it can be, you know, the consequences can be long lasting to the "you idiot" email, because people don't like, I mean, not surprisingly, nobody likes to be called an idiot. And it doesn't exactly facilitate the relationship. So, yeah, well, live and learn.
And now that brings up an interesting point. Should email be used to convey emotion at all?
You asked such great questions. I think generally not. Because in our Work Talk email training, we talk about, I have a training called Principles of Effective Email. And the first principle is to make sure that email is the right medium for the message. And I ask people, if you were going to receive a critical or upsetting message, would you rather get a critical, upsetting email? Or would you rather that the person spoke to you on the phone or on Zoom or better yet, face to face? And everybody wants to receive emotional content in a person-to-person context where they can interact. And the way to use email when you have an emotional message to send is to send to the person an email saying, "There's something I need to discuss with you. Are you available next Tuesday at 10:15? That's how you use email when you have emotions, because the emotional email will come back to bite you.
And I can think of some of the events in the news where companies have fired people over email.
You can be escorted from the premises that day that you send an email that's considered bullying or harassing or going against a protected class. Literally that day, your career can be over. It's terrifying. But people, I think one of the interesting things about email is that it feels so private when you're writing it. Just me and my computer, me and my cubicle, me at my desk, you know, tapping out my message. It feels like it's just me and the person, but they don't realize that email is the most public form of communication. And people forget that their employer owns their inbox. So their employer can read any email they send at work.
And that's another valuable reminder, Liz, because it's so easy to get trapped into thinking, oh, this is just a private email. I'm just sending it just to them. Who else is going to see it? But the reality is the whole world could see it at some point.
You know, you just have to read the newspapers to see. It's on the front page almost every day, according to emails uncovered by the Wall Street Journal, according to emails uncovered by the New York Times. And there go all the dirty secrets on the front page of the newspaper. So bottom line is, if it's confidential, unless you really need a paper trail, and sometimes you do need a paper trail for human resources purposes, I get that. But unless you really want to create a paper trail, then I would say don't do it. Like, for example, I'm coaching someone now that the employee, that she has a new manager, and the manager asked for me to coach the employee because she said the person can't write. She can't write. And I looked at a writing sample, and I think the woman can write, but she's a marketer and she's just not good at persuading. She's good at writing, but she's not good at persuading. So a fellow consultant told me, and I talked to the person I was coaching and asked her, how does she feel when her boss tells her to write? She said, I feel defeated, demoralized, rejected. I'm sure I'm going to fail again. And it was pointed out to me that this person could file a hostile workplace lawsuit if she were so inclined. Now, I have to convey that to my client because that's my job. But I'm saving that little nugget for when we're on a face-to-face call. I'm not mentioning lawsuits. I'm not mentioning anything about that. Because if there is a lawsuit and I emailed it, then there it goes into discovery. So you just have to be very judicious and be careful what you email.
So a good test for what to put in email might be, if this was ever presented as evidence, how would it be perceived?
I love it. You're getting right into the core of what I teach. Because what I tell people is emails are public documents. And I mean, I have a slide that says, if you would be willing, ask yourself, would I be willing to see this email on the front of the New York Times? Would I be willing to see this email and a beautiful PowerPoint in a courtroom? If you would not be, I have a friend whose mother told him to always live his life as if whatever he did was going to be reported on the front page of the New York Times. Very wise advice. And it's true. If you wouldn't be happy seeing your email in court, just don't send it.
So I'm guessing what is okay to put in the email?
What is okay to put in email is appointment setting, data. If you need to give a person a description of a scope of a project, it should be maybe 100 to 200 words, the email. And if the description is longer than that, it should be an attached document or a hyperlink. Because nobody reads long emails. So if you have more than basically one screen's worth of bullet points to put in, or you need to have a lot of detail to explain the bullet points, don't put the whole explanation, don't put the whole nine yards into the email, because nobody will read it. You can do it, but the question is, and this is what we talk about in our trainings, is that every communication has three elements. There's the sender, the message, and the receiver. I'm sure you've spoken about that in many podcasts. So the sender, that's you, the writer. The message is your email or whatever you're writing. And then there's that darn receiver, that pesky receiver, the reader. But it's like an electrical circuit. If the reader doesn't get it, you might as well be home watching Netflix. And that's why we need to think about the reader. And the reader, and I've spoken to people all over the United States, and except for the accountants. I train a lot of accountants. The accountants read to the end of every email. God bless them. But everybody else, they see a long email and they are out of there. So put it into an attachment and just very, very basic. You know, do you have the handouts ready? Will you be there at 6 o'clock? We need to fix the following chandeliers in ballroom A. Very straightforward. And sometimes you can do some short persuasive emails. I just want to backtrack a little and talk about when your topic, your theme, which is your intended message, which I just love. And there are basically three main purposes that business documents have. And those are to inform, to request, and to persuade. If you look at every email you ever wrote, you will see that in all likelihood, it falls into one of those categories. You're telling, you're asking, or you're selling. And we need to know which of those we're doing in order to effectively convey our message.
And Liz, is it okay to mix those three purposes in the same email?
Here's the thing. Every email contains information, but that does not mean that the purpose of the email is to inform. That's the thing that people get stuck on, and they sit and they write and they write and they write and they're telling and informing. And I ask people, imagine, and I'll ask you, imagine that you sit down at your desk one morning and you have 100% of your attention on your email. That would be amazing, but let's just imagine you got 100% on your email. You open up that first email and you immediately realize that it's an FYI. What percent does your attention drop?
Significantly, if not totally.
Isn't that amazing? And I've asked people, I have asked hundreds and hundreds of people that question. They're like, you know, some people are saying 50%, but most people say like 100%, 90%. People aren't interested. And so what's the point? What's the point? If you want a person to do something, don't inform them because they will just forget about it. They need to see why the information matters to them. And that means that if you want results, don't just give a purpose to inform. You have to give information, but you ask a person to do something. You make a request. Please do this. Here's the situation. Please act on it. Or you persuade. Here's the situation. Here's the benefits. Here's the costs. Here's the pluses. Here's the minuses. Please do it. So I recommend that you don't mix up the purposes too much. Informing is like today's Wednesday. That's informational. But if you're going beyond, it's Wednesday and the meeting is at 10:30, or we finished the job as planned, then you want to step up into a more energetic purpose like requesting or persuading.
Liz, when you're asking for the reader to do something, when you want a response or action from them, where in the message should that request be?
You are asking all the right questions. So many people, the majority of messages, of email messages, are read on mobile devices, which means that you have about this much space to grab your reader's attention. So I recommend that people put the main request at the beginning. Maybe a little hope you're having a nice day if you think the person is a social person who needs that. I'll get to that in a minute. But definitely put that request at the beginning, and then you got to figure that they forgot it between the beginning and the end of the email and repeat it at the end of the email. So, dear Janet, hope you're well. Could you please send me the report on our safety equipment by 5 o'clock today? So that is your first paragraph. Then comes the detail. If I don't get it by 5 o'clock, I won't be able to review it before the executive briefing. And then the closing is, thank you for sending me that report on the safety equipment by 5 o'clock. So the beginning and the end are the most powerful places in any communication. So you want to use the beginning and the end to highlight your request.
You teased us. Tell us about the social greetings.
All right, good. So there are two kinds of people in the world. There are get to the point people and have a nice day people. The get to the point people don't want you to wish them a nice day. They are not interested. They don't even care if they are having a nice day. They just want you to just get to it, get to the point. And they want you to say, dear Bob, can you get me that report by 5 p.m. today? But I have spoken to people, and this is a little more prevalent in the South, but it is a character trait that many, many, many people are have a nice day people. And if you don't wish them a nice day, it will actually reduce their openness to your message. Because I've spoken to them and they go, I once did a training. This woman said that her boss had written her an email and he did not capitalize her first name. And this snagged her attention and it reduced her openness and it reduced her comprehension of his email. She was so distracted. Does he not respect me? Does he this? Does he that? Da, 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 da. People just go on in their heads over what another person might consider to be a small thing is to the different person a big thing. So the have a nice day people, you really have to wish them a nice day or in order to get their, to enroll them in being open to your message. So you have to match, like if the other person is sending you emails that are basically get to the point emails, then don't write back to them and wish them a nice day. Usually executives, business owners, very busy people tend to be get to the point people, even if they were have a nice day people yet when they were younger, you get to a higher level and you become a get to the point person because you just don't have time. So if you're writing to a top person, unless you know that they are a have a nice day person, assume that they are a get to the point person and just shoot off your request, shoot off your main point within the first 40 words. In the first 40 words, you can still say have a nice day and get your point in there, but get it right off the bat. So that's what I was talking about is the get to the point people and the have a nice day people.
Liz, would it be safe then if you don't know what the style of the person's personality to just put the have a nice day in the close?
That's a very good question. And I think you would need to put it in the beginning and at the end, because again, I've spoken to these people. I'm obviously a get to the point person or I wouldn't refer to them as these people.
It's okay. This isn't in writing.
Excuse me. I've spoken to people who take this seriously. And if you want their brains and minds and hearts to be open to the content of your email, you have to disarm them by greeting them politely at the beginning. And then you can always, I mean, with everyone, you can say, thanks for your help. Thanks. And there is, by the way, measurably a greater response to emails that contain thanks. So I often will start an email. Thanks for your email. Thanks for your attention. Thanks for your patience. Because once you thank a person, you've got their attention. They go, oh, wow. It's like giving a person a gift when you thank them. And due to what we have the book Influence by, I forgot his name.
Robert Cialdini?
Right, Robert Cialdini. Thank you. Robert Cialdini talks about that the first principle of persuasion and influence is the principle of reciprocity. That if I give you something, you want to give me something to even us out. So it's a very subtle thing. It's very, very subtle. But giving a person thanks is a way of giving them a gift. And they will want to respond. It will stimulate them to respond by wanting to give you their attention, by wanting to do something for you. So it's kind of interesting. It's very, you know, thanking people is one of the most valuable things you'll do all day.
True. Yes, we've been taught that by our parents, and that's a good lesson to remember, to thank people. And it's curious you meant, and yes, I'm a to the point person. I get annoyed by people who start a message with, "Hi, how are you?" Like, you don't right. care how I am. Stop that nonsense.
Right. Right.
And now I'm also reminded of, I was talking to a company leader and they were having a problem with a supplier and the wording, the original draft of a message they were going to send in a letter was using the words, we're frustrated with your service. Now, I thought, that's not a good way to start. What's wrong with that?
Well, they started with that, dear so-and-so, we're frustrated with your service. I would have to know more about the context and how many times they had communicated their frustration in a different form. You know, if this was the first time they're letting them know that they're frustrated, then I might say that's a little harsh. If this is the fourth time and they've had multiple conversations and they have spoken to different people in the organization, and this is a longstanding problem, then maybe it would be appropriate. But those are big guns. And I think that, again, it goes back to sender, message, receiver. Like, how is the receiver going to respond? So if you get an email, if you get a letter that says, "Dear George, we're frustrated with your service," you know, what emotions does that trigger in you? Fear, defensiveness, anger.
You can't talk like that to me.
Yeah, who the heck are you? And don't you understand my problems? And I have problems too. I mean, it just sets a whole chatter in motion in your reader's mind. And that's why I just keep coming back to your intended message. Because, like, letting a person know that you're frustrated with them is writing to inform. You're informing them that you're frustrated. But it doesn't really go anywhere. It doesn't go anywhere just to tell a person you're frustrated. What you want is a solution. And that's why I tell people, in every message that you send should move the process forward. Everything should move it forward. And just saying, dear Joe, we're frustrated with your service. I mean, I don't know. I didn't read the rest of the letter, but I mean, it doesn't matter that they're frustrated. It's irrelevant that they're frustrated. You know, I would rather see, dear Bob, your service has been unreliable, and we request that you fix it within 10 days or we'll be forced to seek another vendor. That's what I would do. We're frustrated. Who cares? It's just going to upset the person.
And what I'm hearing, Liz, is stick to the facts, not emotions.
If you're writing a business email, you can do some positive emotion. You know, I'm delighted to hear from you. It would be a pleasure to work with you. It was a pleasure to talk to you. But I do warn people against multiple exclamation marks. And that is a really, and unfortunately, this is more the province of women than men. I see it a lot in women. And I know I'm generalizing, but I think it's accurate. It was interesting. I did a training once. I had all these people on a Zoom call. You know, there's like 20 little faces on the Zoom call. And I said, okay, how many of you use multiple exclamation marks? And all these women are raising their hands. And then I asked this guy, I said, so do you use multiple exclamation marks? He says, I never use exclamation marks. It was very funny. So just one exclamation mark, little positive feeling, but negative feelings should be spoken either very neutrally. I was disappointed to realize that you had not sent in the report on time. Okay, that's kind of neutral, but keep most of the emotion out of your business emails, because it's not the province of strong emotions.
And Liz, I see emails. Now, these are people who are trying to sell me something. And they send me more than one message, and I ignore the first one, and then they send me again, and the next line is, "Did you read my last email?" Of course not. And so now I just ignore the rest of the email, because the first line is so obnoxious.
It is obnoxious, but I think that what we can learn from that is, because there is a school of thought in sales that says that you should continue to pursue the prospect right up until they say no. That is a philosophy of some people in sales. Like, I'm going to keep trying until you actually tell me no. So you could save yourself those repeat emails by just writing back to the first one, "Sorry, not interested." And then hopefully they won't send you any more emails. I mean, if they do, then that's obnoxious, really obnoxious. But just going beyond email, I think that in all our writing, we need to think about our purpose, our reader, and our main point. And I teach a tool, which is a life-changing tool, called the 3 P's. The 3 P's are purpose, person, and point. And I advise people before any major communication, written or spoken, that they think about these 3 things first. What is my purpose? Am I informing, requesting, persuading? What person will enable me to achieve my purpose? And we talk about the person's hot buttons. What do they care about? What makes their hearts go pitter-pat? What are they wondering? What are they asking themselves? And then you have to know your point before you start. Otherwise, you're going to be dragging it out and dragging and dragging and dragging your reader along with you while you go through your whole convoluted mental process of finding your point. And that is not right. It's the writer's job to know the point before they start. So purpose, person, and point goes beyond email to really anything that a person writes.
Purpose, person, and point, worth remembering. Liz, if people would like to learn more about better writing and how you can help them, where can they find you?
I am at worktalk.com, worktalk.com. And if you go to the homepage, you can sign up for Writeman's monthly writing tips. And they're fun to read. They're short. They're really useful. So sign up for Writeman's writing tips and you'll get a nugget of value every month. I'm also offering a half hour free consultation to anyone who listens to this pod or sees this podcast. And I think that the information will be on the website. So
yes,
if you would like to discuss some issue in communication in your company, just reach out and set a time and we'll talk.
There you are. To arrange a half hour with Liz to help deal with your communication questions and challenges, or to get a hold of her monthly tips, the Writeman's, you can find those links in the description below. Liz, as we prepare to wrap up, if you could sit down with a business leader who has staff that need help with their communication, particularly their written communication, if that reader could sit down with them and give them 1, 2, or 3 ideas to improve their writing, other than calling Liz and signing up for the tips, what advice would you give to the leader that the leader could give to their staff?
I would say, number one, know your point before you start. Number two, keep your sentence length low. Don't write sentences that are over an average of 20 words per sentence. Keep the sentences short. And third is to reread before you send.
Powerful, powerful. Especially the part about rereading, because rereading, should that happen right then, or do we park it and come back to it an hour later?
You ask the best questions. Ideally, if it's important, do not send it right after you write it. Because you're operating a different part of your brain with the creative writing and with the editing that's asking your brain to completely pivot and use a different part of the brain. Ideally, you should put it aside for at least an hour. If it's really important, put it aside overnight. But even if you don't have time to put it aside, then reread it before you send it and make sure you haven't made some obvious blunder.
My guest today is Liz Danziger, reminding you that most writing happens before you write.
If you like what you heard, tell your friends and post your 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, because that helps more listeners find us. Come back every week for more practical insights to help you deliver your intended message. I'm your host, George Torok.